This is the true story of the false origins of the Seven Mountain message.
Gather around, boys and girls. I want to tell you a story. It's a story that has been hiding in plain sight. But when you know how it goes, you might not look at the Seven Mountains the same way again. For those who don't know what the Seven Mountains are, I'll provide an overview. The list, as it has come to be used by Christian nationalists, started with Youth with a Mission founder Lauren Cunningham. As far as I can determine, it was dominionized by Lance Wallnau and Johnny Inlow. According to former Reconstructionist leader Joel McDermott, Lance Wallnau used it as a marketing tool to describe taking dominion over all the spheres of the culture. Without all of the baggage, the seven terms describe types of activities people engage in within a culture. People may be active in their families, education, politics, the arts and entertainment, business, religion, and/or the media. But believe me, there is baggage. Lauren Cunningham said God told him to reach the world with the Christian message by teaching people in each of these areas. He then had a meeting with his friend Bill Bright, the founder and leader of Campus Crusade for Christ. Bright allegedly had about the same list written down prior to their meeting, which was arranged by a common donor. Bright didn't write or speak much about this, but Cunningham spoke about it often and made it a part of his work with Youth with a Mission. It largely stayed within YWAM until Lance Wallnau took an interest in it sometime around the year 2000. Here's Cunningham's description of how he came up with the list and the idea about what to do with the list. This audio is from 2022 and is hosted on a YWAM YouTube account.
It was in the year of 1975. It was in the month of August, and a friend had loaned us a cabin up in the Rockies of Colorado on the western slope. And we had it for a whole week. It was my first day there. We'd come in at evening time. And I was just sitting listening to the Lord. And he began to speak to me about his heart for the nations and said, I want to give you some classrooms to disciple, that is to teach the nations. And so I had my yellow pad out. Now I have my iPad, the yellow pad. And so I started writing it, and they gave me seven of them. And I wrote them down one by one. And he said, now this is how you disciple nations. Only you do it through the people called into these various spheres. He used the term. So there's also places in society that we call the spheres of influence. Now, these spheres of influence are different than the domains of authority, though they overlap at times. Some of them overlap with authority. But I'm not talking about so much the authority. That's where we often see cults formed. So now with this, as God gave me the list, I was amazed at it. I watched it. And the difference between influence and authority is phenomenal. When leaders try to use all authority all the time, they find that people vote with their feet and leave them. But when they actually use their influence both grows and people want to give them more authority because there's trust in it. And that's a very important thing. You watch a president or a prime minister or something, and they'll take off and start to ram things down their throats, and then they wonder why they divide the nation.
For Cunningham, the seven areas were classrooms, and the attitude of a Christian in each sphere was to be an influencer, not a ruler. YWAM is an organization that seeks to evangelize individuals in every nation. That all changed when Lance Wallnau engaged the concept. Listen to Wallnau teach the rudiments of the concept regarding administering the mountains. In Wallnau's view, taking nations isn't about winning souls. In fact, you will hear him say you can't do it that way. I'll have more to say about the problems with this shift later in the program.
God wants to have the tabernacle at the top of every one of these spheres. You want to know what the spheres are that shape a nation? This is how you take a nation. You have to get into the family. That's why same-sex marriage is such a demonic agenda. Get into the marriages. Get into the marriage. Because whoever gets the family mountain shapes the idea of what culture is for a man and wife. You got to get into the education mountain. You know why? Because whoever's ideology is shaping that little kid when he's a child. By the time he's 19, hey, for all you know, he could become part of the Hitler Youth Movement and die for the Führer. So Hitler basically knew if he educated his kids, he'd have them as sons to go fight for him. Education mountain, government mountain, where your laws get legislated, media mountain, where the truth is debated, and the arts mountain, which is where a lot of times sports and creativity comes along. We got business and finance. Is it possible that there are seven sovereign spheres of authority? So you go into government. What would that look like? If you go into government and you've got the glory of God, you'll have wisdom, signs, and wonders operating there because you're dealing with a spiritual principality that's up there. So God has to have a royal priesthood who can ascend to high places and open up a portal of glory. And on top of that high place, they and their friends can come into agreement. Now you've got a tabernacle, a house, a church, a governing presence where fire comes down, the presence of God is there, and God's glorified. By the way, that's how you take nations. It's the only way you take nations. There's never been a nation taken as a result of an evangelism harvest. Shocking but true. Believers don't know these things. That's why we get in trouble. You realize that when you have 8% of a population, that's the key. 8%. That's all it takes. 8%, according to the Center for Religion Diplomacy, practice jihad. 8%, according to the research of James Davison Hunter, are doing the same-sex marriage initiative. You've got 80% Jews and Catholics and Protestants, 35% of evangelicals, even Mormons. You have a very broad constituency of 85 to 90% of the American population is not for same-sex marriage. How is it that 8% can impose their agenda on the other 90%? It's not because we don't have enough converts to an idea. It's because when Satan is shrewder in his own generation than the sons of light, he makes sure that he has his prophets of Baal at the high places. So what you have is you have a well-positioned 8% whose agenda is working with the will of principalities and powers, while Christians are in pursuit of the supernatural or the glory or prosperity, but they're missing the apostolic assignment. They're to take over spheres and administrate them for the glory of God. They're to take over spheres and administrate them for the glory of God. That's the only way you can teach nations, is when you take over a sphere and administrate it for the glory of God. So what we have is we have a conundrum, because you only need 8%, a minority, in the right place, and they become the leverage that shapes the culture. Because every sphere has its own sovereign authority, and the gospel is supposed to be going to kings. We've missed this point completely. My generation is so sentimental about the poor, they do it backwards. The first century had to remember the poor because they knew they had to go to kings. My generation forgets about the kings and they obsess with the poor. The kings. How does that fit? Well, you see, if you're in charge of government and you're in Argentina and the revival hasn't affected you, you ain't governing with a lot of wisdom.
After he heard the seven classrooms or spheres of influence from Cunningham in 2000, Wallnau changed the tone and intention of the story. Wallnau appears to attribute the shift to another story he said he heard shortly after talking to Cunningham. At least, he thought he heard a story. What you're about to hear is what Lance Wallnau calls, quote, the true story of the false origins of the Seven Mountains message, end quote.
So I got the Seven Mountain message. I never claimed originality with it, and I never wrote a book on it. And probably smartly, because it's like Amazing Grace. It's public domain now. Everybody claims it. But when I got it, I got it actually wrong. I had been talking to Kim Clement's secretary, who told me about a senator who had died of a heart attack and how he was raised from the dead and had a prophecy from Kim that he was going to live and have a son named Caleb, and that that prophecy helped to pull him through because his wife refused to accept his death, though he was without oxygen for 45 minutes, and commanded his spirit to come back into his body, and it came back into his body, and the guy was elected for four terms as a state senator in Georgia. And for 45 minutes, he was out of his body. Now, this is the weirdest thing. I leave it to you to figure out what happened. She says to me, "Lance," I said, "I'm going to go interview him. I got to hear this because I heard that he had experiences for 45 minutes in heaven and that he reveals some of them." And she said to me, "Yes." This is so strange. She said, "He was there at an ocean, so I had a vision of an ocean, and out of the ocean, suddenly seven islands came up, and the islands grew up out of the ocean, became great mountains. And the Lord said to him, 'Those are seven world kingdoms that shape the world.' And then one great mountain appeared on the horizon above them. And the Lord said, 'That is the mountain of my kingdom, and it is greater than all the kingdoms of this earth.' And then the Lord spoke to him and pointed at one mountain and said, 'That is the government mountain, and you are called to go into it, but there must be agreement.' At which point he realized that he needed to agree with his prophetic destiny if he was going to come back into his body. And so at that moment, he came into agreement, and next thing you know, his eyes are blinking open and his wife is commanding his spirit back into his body. So I had this is my conversation with her. Well, I go up to Randy Clark's Voice of the Apostles conference, first one, Heidi Baker, Bill Johnson, I'm speaking here, and I tell the story with all of the zeal of somebody who's giving a firsthand report, because I had met with Lauren Cunningham just a little while before that, and Lauren Cunningham said, "Lance, did I ever tell you about the seven mind molders of culture?" And I said, "See, he called them mind molders of culture." He said, "And the Lord showed me. He said, there are seven spheres. If we disciple these spheres, we could have a harvest of nations." And he says to me, "Look, and here it is. It's like, you know, the religion sphere of church, and then family, education, and government, and media, and arts, and business." He said, "But then Bill Bright and I are supposed to meet." He says, some donor that gives us both money insisted we meet. He said, "Look, the guy's evangelical with Campus Crusade. I'm not evangelical. I'm charismatic with Youth with a Mission. But this donor insisted we meet, so out of politeness, we met. And when we met, we actually discovered we have a lot in common. He pulled out a piece of paper, and the night before, the Lord showed him seven world kingdoms. And Lance, those world kingdoms, when we lined them up with what I got, it was different language, the same thing. It was entertainment instead of arts. It was commerce and economics instead of business." He said, "But it actually lined up." Well, when I heard about the seven mountains coming out of the ocean, I start with seven mountains. I label it, preach it. And then the first time, I just saw that movie Gladiator, and I said, "Let's all stand on our feet at the end of this. We're going to say, 'As one.'" And so we all did this. Everyone stood up and go, "As one." And I kid you not, Randy Clark was there. When we did "As one," the angelic realm echoed back "As one" right on top of us. We said it, and then "As one" came right back, boom, right back on top of us. And it was like, whoa, everybody's screaming and having, you know, Toronto panic attacks. It was delightful. So I go to meet Mike Crotts, the senator. And I said, "Tell me about these seven mountains." He didn't know what I was talking about. This is the true story of the false origins of the seven mountain message. I said, "Well, what about, you know, the mountain comes up out of the middle and, you know, you're called to go in." He said, "Well, the Lord told me I was called to go into government, but he said there was like a lake and he showed me these spheres that were there in the lake and they were all people with employment. And it was not preachers. It was people with jobs and careers and spheres of influence. And they were like, and the Lord showed me how they were rising up and ruling over spheres of kingdom that were given to them. And that was the end time move of God." He said, "I can only tell you this. There's parts of this the Lord told me you will not remember." He said, "Only parts I'm going to let you remember." He said, "So I don't know if that happened or not. Now, here's the weird part. I kid you not. I call up Debbie Arn and go, Debbie, I feel so stupid. I just had a camera crew interviewing Senator Mike Crotts, and I'm leading up to the Christian. I just taught in Harrisburg. I sold out a series. We've started a whole movement off of a fallacy. If this is, I said, why did you tell me he had seven mountains? I said, it's a good metaphor, but I mean, it's on tape. I told it like it's a fact. She said, Dr. Lance, I don't want to offend you, but I don't recall talking to you about this at all. I said, Debbie, I can only take so much crazy in 1 week. Did you not talk to me? She said, we had one conversation. I don't remember the other one you're talking about. And I said, I asked you details. I got notes. She goes, Dr. Walnut, that might have been an angel or somebody else, but it wasn't me. That's the actual. So I went to Peter, and Peter said, don't worry about it. Just give the message. So who knows where the heck that came from, but it's a good one. So Peter's what Malcolm Gladwell would call, in the language of influence and tipping points, Peter Wagner was what you call a sneezer. Someone who sneezes is somebody who takes an idea and by their own platform, credibility, and endorsement gets everybody else infected with it. It's not a glamorous metaphor, but it's perfect. And there are people who, once they have an idea, for better or for worse, everybody's going to get it. And so what Peter did was he endorsed an idea that I'm convinced gave that whole Seven Mountain thing legs that went global, because then Dutch Sheets would say it and Cindy Jacobs would say it and Chuck would endorse it. And by the time everybody was in alignment with him would go with it pretty much. And so everywhere I went, I heard about it. And my friend Johnny Enlow wrote books on it, which I loved reading, and there, boom, the books were out. And that was really weird. Is people would come up to me, I never wrote a book. People came up to me and thanked me for my book. And I realized, this is so bizarre. I never wrote a book. But they read his someone else's book and think that must have been me. I said, oh, what the heck.
There is a lot to unravel here. According to a book Mike Crotts wrote about his experience, he was unconscious for 34 minutes, not 45. Beyond that detail, let me summarize. In 2000, Walnow heard Lauren Cunningham talk about the seven spheres of influence. Then Walnow thought he heard a vision about seven mountains from a Georgia State Senator, Mike Crotts. At the first Voice of the Apostles conference in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, around 2002, Walnow tells the Crotts story. The seven mountains story gains momentum. Later, Walnow learned that he doesn't have a source for the story, and ask Peter Wagner what to do. Wagner says, quote, don't worry about it, just give the message, end quote. After Wagner sneezes, the Seven Mountains message becomes widespread, and Walnow becomes famous. While this isn't part of the story in the clip, I'll add, Walnow was the first apostolic Christian to endorse Trump. This heightened his profile and enhanced the Seven Mountains teaching even more. I will submit, he might not have been in a position to endorse Trump if not for the Seven Mountains teaching. Now, let's evaluate this. I will start by saying that I'm skeptical of all of this. But even if you do believe such things, you will have to acknowledge that Walnow changed the message and scope of Cunningham's revelation. I think Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies senior scholar Matthew Taylor provides a solid analysis.
Cunningham's imagery is still about spheres of influence. It's non-directional. It's you go into a sphere of influence and influence it. It's not like you take over the sphere of influence. You go, like, the idea is basically Christians need to be salt and light. They need to be go out. And it's a grassroots model of transformation. But then when Walnow and Wagner get a hold of this with the mountain imagery, and then they layer in more and more dominion theology to the point where it is about spiritual warfare to conquer the tops of the mountains, because the tops of the mountains are either controlled by Satan and demons or Christians in the kingdom of God. And then Christian influence will flow down, right? So it becomes this vanguard model of capturing the top of society and transforming it almost overnight, is their vision.
So not only is Walnau's teaching a significant revision of Cunningham's self-described revelation, we later find out that Walnau's morphed message is based on a false story. And you don't have to take my word for it. To his credit, you heard it directly from Lance Walnau. In 2024, the message, false though it is, keeps on spreading. For instance, according to University of North Georgia English professor Matthew Bodie, white race apologist and Christian nationalist Charlie Kirk is now promoting the Seven Mountains message within his organization, Turning Point USA.
Charlie Kirk promotes the Seven Mountains as individual leaders or minority group of leaders taking over those mountains, then that is a way in which to end participation for all of us. I mean, he had, I think it was Marjorie Taylor Greene on his show a year ago. I was watching a clip from it, and she wanted, they were talking about people from blue states moving to red states, and she wanted to ban people who move from blue states to red states from voting in state and local elections for 5 years so they could be taught a lesson about how things should run in that new red state. And like Charlie was like, yeah, that's a great idea. It's a good thought experiment.
Why are Christian nationalists of all types using this framework to describe how to take over the culture? If we can believe Honorable Dr. Lance, it all goes back to Peter Wagner's sneeze. But even though he knew the message was based on a false story, Walnau kept on preaching it, telling other people, including former Reconstructionist leader Joel McDermott, that the Seven Mountains message was a marketing ploy.
Someone came up with this marketing slogan called, you know, there are seven areas that we have to take dominion over. And then someone said, portrayed it as seven mountains. And that became the marketing movement. And I use that phrase because the person who came up with it specifically told me it was a marketing ploy. And that there are seven mountains of dominion. There's the mountain of education, the mountain of politics, and I forget all the others. Family was one. And we have to take dominion. We have to sit on top of these mountains and rule them.
No reason to let a good story go to waste, I guess. But really, why should I be surprised? A movement that uses fake history as foundation should be expected to use fake stories in other areas too. It is the Seven Mountains, after all. There are many mountains to falsify. Some might object and say, but Walnau admitted the truth of the false story, didn't he? Shouldn't he get credit for that? Well, yes, he did acknowledge it, but then, after a chuckle, he keeps on telling God's children that the way you take nations is with fire and portals of glory and tabernacles by defeating satanic prophets of Baal, otherwise known as Democrats, Independents, and Never Trump Republicans. Believe it or not, your progressive local election workers, school board members, and county commissioners are not the angels of darkness in disguise. They love their children and pay their bills, just like the apostles. Except the apostles get a lot of help from the Christian warriors. If this was just religious kayfabe and nothing real was riding on this, I might not spend a bonus episode on it. But the people listening to Walnau are as serious as Mike Crott's heart attack, that politics is really spiritual warfare, and their savior is Donald Trump. Metaphors and marketing ploys matter. Think about the implication of the Seven Mountains concept. According to Walnau, if apostolic Christians aren't ruling those mountains, then prophets of Baal are. Demonic forces are in charge. Think about how this belief poisons the ability of people to interact politically regarding policy questions and getting anything accomplished for constituents. If you believe this way, then everything is a spiritual warfare. If Walnau's rhetoric is reality, your ideological opponent isn't just wrong. They're literally serving Satan and an enemy of God. Perhaps this is why some of the Seven Mountains adherents use violent imagery and some even call for actual violence. Some of the January 6th insurrectionists justified their activities with spiritual warfare imagery. Johnny Inlow, author of several books on the Seven Mountains ideas, said in March 2023 that Trump would be justified in calling for armed revolution if he doesn't win the presidency. Listen first to Steve Schultz candidly admit that all of the prophets failed in their predictions of a Trump presidency, and that they did. And despite the fact that he didn't win, Schultz still calls him what Lance Wallnau first described him as, a Cyrus leader, after the Persian king Cyrus, who allowed the Jewish Babylonian exiles to return to Jerusalem.
All of us got the timing off. All of us thought it was right now or soon or any day. And I don't think any of us can pat ourselves on the back and say, we got it right. None of us got it right as far as timing goes, which loosens us all from blame, if we can put it that way, and say, we all can agree on one thing. He's still a Cyrus, and he's still in play. I don't know. I feel there's going to be a coming together of the prophetic movement. But any thoughts on that?
After Schultz gave his opinion, he asked Inlow for his. Then Inlow uncorked his view that Donald Trump is still sitting on the throne of the government mountain. But if Trump believes he will not gain power in the natural realm, he should call for revolution.
Yeah, well, the way I don't think the timing has changed, if the timing being right would mean that the Democrats would not have been allowed to steal the election, then yes. But I do not believe that for one moment that he has stepped back at all, particularly in the eyes of the Lord, as being the ruling. I say it over and over, and this is the part I've never changed. He is the number one kingdom asset for government on planet Earth, and has been. That has not changed. And just because there's a stealing of election, his influence is so powerful. I don't people understand that if he really was panicked about us losing, you know, he's older in life, even though he's maintaining his strength and everything well. If he's nearing 80 and he thinks we've really lost the country, he would be justified in calling for a revolution and saying we have to, for my kids and for my kids' sake, we have to be willing. And if he made that call, they would find out he is the man of power in this country. Because not only is it in the eyes of God, but in the eyes of man, if he gave any hint or evidence that we have lost it, you know, he says we've lost it, but there's always this thing of they're working and something's happening. But if ever he just put on the desperation thing, it's like, it's time to take up arms. We have to be willing to go.
Johnny Inlow's Seven Mountains is a long way from Lauren Cunningham's Seven Mountains. Remember, all of this rhetoric has been directly inspired by a teaching that was based on a false story. Let's keep it real. God did not show Lauren Cunningham, Lance Wallnau, Mike Krotz, Johnny Inlow, or anyone else that the Christian's mission in this world is to take the government by stealth or by force. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. You're listening to a supplemental episode in the Telling Jefferson Lies podcast series, hosted, written, and produced by Warren Throckmorton. Go to gettingjeffersonright.com for more information about the series and the book Getting Jefferson Right. A big hat tip to Matthew Taylor for the rest of the story behind the Seven Mountains mythology. Along with producer Bradley Onishi, Taylor offers a helpful podcast series on the New Apostolic Reformation titled Charismatic Revival Fury, which would not be a terrible name for a band. Listen to it wherever you get your podcasts. The closing song today is Endless Runner by the band Robo Surgeon Fish. These lads can play. See the show notes for more credits, including where you can find music for the series. The regular episode this week on the consequences of Christian nationalism is likely to be a day or so late. I plan to wrap up the series by April 18th and plan to drop the finale that day. Everything in between is an adventure. Please give the podcast a big old 5 rating. Tell your friends, and thanks for listening.